the Ravens have earned the benefit of the doubt. And that pains me to say. Like, you, I don't want to think that the Ravens are going to be able to win this division, not with ease, but that they're definitely the favorites. And I would probably put the Steelers third right behind Cincinnati just because of the Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase effect. Even though their defense is just so bad, they can win so many games just because of their offense. And I think back to Sean, remember when the last time the Steelers were good? It was Ben.
Not to really think back.
It's about a decade. It was Ben. It was Bell. It was Brown. It was Martavis Bryant. It was a veteran, experienced offensive line with Marquise Pouncey, Foster, DeCastro, Gilbert, the likes. And their defense, I mean, their secondary had like Mike Mitchell, Sean Davis, Artie Burns, Ross Cockrell, Antoine Blake. There was a linebacking core that was banged up. Their defensive line was fine, but Cam Hayward wasn't nearly the player that he is right now. And the point that I'm trying to make is their defense was shaky, their offense was elite, and they were still going to the playoffs and still winning some playoff games, going to the AFC Championship against the Patriots. Sure, they had the Boswell field goal game, but they positioned themselves well enough to be able to get into the playoffs and have a good chance at that. And in years past, it was the offense that drove it. Now they're trying to have the defense completely drive the bus, and it just frankly hasn't worked. So the highest paid defense has to play like the highest paid defense. And I have Keanu Benton number 6. Juan Thornhill number 7. Keanu Benton last year, and one note on Broderick Jones too before we shift, he was a 58 overall grade last year according to PFF, 89th of 140 tackles. His run blocking grade was league average. His pass blocking, way below league average. So that's obviously going to be a point of contention as to how Broderick Jones factors in. But Keanu Benton, I do have some faith in, is going to be able to take a leap. I think he's going to benefit from Derek Harmon being next to him. It's going to take some pressure off of Benton, but he needs to be able to stop the run and get to the quarterback more often. And he needs that year 3 jump that a lot of players sometimes have. Finally, on Juan Thornhill. Thornhill had a 65 overall grade last year. No interceptions, 3 pass breakups. Basically graded out as an average player in every statistical category. The only way that I could see Juan Thornhill being able to thrive in this scheme is if they basically have Ramsey, Slay, Porter cover large portions of the field and only give Thornhill minimal assignments. And I don't think that's probably best for the defense to basically have to hide somebody back there. But if there is a spot to do it, it's probably Thornhill's spot. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Sunny and hot today with a high of Ernie Mills and Benny Cunningham. And that's 89. Tyler Kennedy will join us coming up next as the Steelers continue to move in. The training camp will continue to update you on it. Jalen Ramsey today being named the 66th best player in the NFL top 100 list as voted on by the players. Cole Holcomb is there. Nick Herbig just walking in with what looks out like a really interesting Hawaiian shirt that also has duct tape attached to it. Keanu Benton has arrived. We'll continue to update some of the arrivals and what was said as Pat Freiermuth is also moving into St. Vincent. Roman Wilson as well, and what some of the players said as they spoke to the media on their way in and on their way out back for the first time to football for the first time since early January. Sean has a headline. We're back with TK on the Fam.
Tyler Kennedy.
You know what that means. It's time for Tyler Kennedy. TK, great to see you. Good to talk to you.
Nice to see you, too. It's nice to be back in the studio with the boys. Actually, just you today.
Yeah, no Joe, no Bob. Sean Myers producing behind the glass. We were just looking up at the screen. Sportsnet Pittsburgh's getting ready for the game, and we saw Paul Skeens. And Skeens is just really a great ambassador. Especially just in year 2. He's still a young guy. I think we all forget he's only, 22, about to turn 23. And he's just a great ambassador for the game, great ambassador for the Pirates, always there meeting with people, talking to people. Was it similar? Do you see similar things with Sid? Like, I imagine Sid is just a magnet for people that want to come up and talk to him.
Especially at the beginning of Sid's career. Everywhere we went, like, everyone was going there to see him. And I remember one time, I was like, hey, Sid, you want to go for lunch? And he's like, I'd love to, TK, but I got to go home. I got to sign some stuff for a couple hours. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I got to sign stuff for a couple hours, like probably 1,000, you know, some of those hockey cards or whatever. But he signs so much stuff, and then you get pulled in so many directions because somebody wants a piece. But Sid does so much stuff like behind, without the cameras there, behind closed doors, doesn't really want people. He does it for the right reasons. And obviously, you see when Skeens, Ben Roethlisberger, all those guys, when Pat McPhee had him down at PPG Paints.
Yeah, like, I was there.
Like, you wonder, just like Skeens knowing so much about Sid, like if he's learning from him. You know, like Sid does everything so right. And then you see a guy like Skeens, middle of the year, bringing all these guys down, has such a great name, such a great personality. Like, I'm not sure about his personality. He seems pretty tight when he talks. Like, doesn't really give
he doesn't have much to say.
Yeah, and it's even better when he talks about, you know, Livy and how they are. He just gives like two word answers, which is like hilarious. But you see him bringing like a lot of, you know, special needs or, you know, just maybe unfortunate kids down and making them feel special. Like, that's a leader. Because when I saw Sid do it, I was like, well, probably the busiest guy and the most important guy on the team is doing it every day or as much as he can. You better do it yourself. And that's leadership.
Well, and it seems like he didn't even, by the way you're saying it, make it sound like an obligation. It was just something that he wanted to do. He felt a responsibility just kind of for the game of hockey to do.
Yeah. And you know what? You never found out the day of, or it was always like a week after, or, you know, you run into people like, oh, we saw Sid at the hospital last Tuesday. And I'm like, that was our day off, you know, but he does it for the right reasons. And he does it to show that hockey players are a different breed. They take care of everyone. And again, I can talk all day about how good of a person Sidney Crosby is, but it's so nice to see a guy like Skeens starting to bring people down, starting to get a little bit of publicity about being the right guy. And when you have guys like that, that are, you know, probably the most important guys on the team doing it, like that goes through the whole team. And it shows you what you should be doing.
And your culture setters.
Yeah, it's a different kind of culture, right? It's a culture that we're more than just baseball players, hockey players. We're human beings. We know how to take care of people. We know how to make people feel good. And we have a platform through the sport to do this. And I don't think I've ever seen a kid on the ice with Sidney Crosby or meet and greet with Sidney Crosby that didn't have a smile ear to ear. Like, I mean, changed the outlook on the day, on the year, on his life. Like, and again, like I said, it was always, I never, you know, you don't find out about a lot of this stuff until like a week or two after or months after.
Yeah, he's not looking for any credit or anything. Yeah, just exactly. the type of people that Skeens, Ben, Sid are, makes it pretty impressive. But today is report day for the Steelers. First day of camp, TK. What was it like for you when you reported to camp for the first day? Is there jitters? Is there emotion that goes into it? What goes through your mind as you bring all your stuff and get ready to go? Now, it's different, obviously, because the Steelers are going up to St. Vincent.
Yeah, yeah.
But still in the same regard, report day, day one, take me through it.
Well, there's like a lot leading up to it, especially if, you know, especially with the Penguins having made the playoffs. Like, they have a long time off, and I remember, you know, you get there a week or two before, but the jitters for me, like, I wasn't a guy that ever felt safe that I can go to training camp and maybe get in shape or just fit in. Like, I needed to put on a performance at training camp. I needed to be in the best shape ever. So it was always nerve-wracking, and it always, like, I always felt like I was getting chased by someone. So I think my whole career, I never slept good the night before testing or the first day. Because you never know what can happen. Even though I was on like a one-way deal, you still have those jitters. And probably the biggest jitters I've ever had was like my first 2 years, because they used to put you on the VO2 and the bike. And the VO2 is like, you literally got on a treadmill. They put like those big, huge masks on your mouth. And then they're like, start running. And then the treadmill goes faster and the elevation, you know, the front of the treadmill starts going up. And a guy like me, I'm pushing 5'10", and you're running a lot harder than a guy like that 6'2", that's got those long legs. So I felt like I was working. I never really ever did good.
It's kind of like a stress test. A little bit.
And I swear you hit that. I think it was like you got to hit like 10 or 11 minutes. Like you are whipped. And it is like you're having anxiety because you're like, am I going to be the first guy to fall off the back of the treadmill because I don't want to give up? But all that stuff was like very intimidating because it was like competition. That was like you couldn't hide. You couldn't blame it on anyone else. Even Dan Bylsma used to – we didn't do off-ice testing after we won the cup, but we did one on-ice test. And it was at the goal line down and back three times. And there was three other guys you were racing against. You had a minute and a half off. You had a minute and a half off. They took your blood. And then you did it again. And it was like, I was like in elementary school racing against your buddies. Okay, you're going to go as hard as you can. And I think my heart rate was like, I swear, it was like 187. But I was very good at dropping my heart rate. I think I dropped my heart rate to 125 in a minute and a half from 187.
How did you do that? Just preparation, and the more you do it,
in good shape. I ran a lot in the summer. I used to work out like someone was taking my job. Every time I stepped in the gym, every time I woke up early, every time I did extra, I always had that motivation that someone was coming to steal my job. And I think that's what kept me in the league so long, that I always had that little bit of a fear factor. And especially with the Penguins, like you go to training camp and you weren't on and you had guys like Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Fleury, all those guys, like you better be on because everyone wanted to play for the Penguins in the heyday. So it was definitely nerve wracking. But once you settled in, once I got, you know, a couple days in, I always felt good because I always came to training camp in tip top shape because I had to.
Who pushed you the most in those speed drills? Was Sid the best at all of them? Or was there somebody else that you're like, all right, if I can beat this person, then I can make a point to the coaching staff?
Well, like for strength, it was always Brooks Orpik. Orps was like, you do, I think it was 155 pounds on the bench press, and you just ripped it out as many times as you could. I think I got like 20. Brooksy got like 40, 42.
I always thought that he was the type of guy where if there was any type of fight or any type of scuffle right around the boards, Orpik's the one guy you stay away from outside of like Matt Cook, because Matt Cook will just kick
you. Exactly. Like Brooksy, it was funny because the beginning of Brooksy's like career, when I got into like the Penguins, he was like this real big jack guy, like just like real strong and very, really took care of himself. That comes from Gary Roberts, Mark Recchi. Those are the guys that were really setting the tone with eating healthy, and Brooksy kind of went like with them and did all that kind of stuff. So Brooksy was unbelievable. But by the end of Brooksy's career, he was like kind of like a skinny, like shredded guy, but he was strong as an ox. Probably the most overall best shape was either Chris Letang or Pascal Dupuis.
Dupuis, really?
Oh, Dupuis was an animal.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
An animal. Like for, honestly, for having four kids, two dogs, he was like in the best shape I've ever seen anyone. Like he was, for the skates, for being strong, for always just not looking tired. Duper was unbelievable. Obviously, you see all the videos with Chris Letang. Have you seen the videos of Chris Letang working out this summer?
No, I did not.
Like Tanger's on another level of strength too. Like he is.
He's even just after strong. The heart issues that he's had too.
Yeah, like I had a hard time doing 10 push-ups or 10 chin-ups. Like I can do 10. I could probably push out 15 chin-ups in my heyday. Tanger was doing like 10 with like 100 pounds wrapped around his waist. Like he was just different. He was strong. Sid was always Sid. You know, like he was just perfect at everything. But know what a guy that really always came into training camp and you'd have to be like, oh, if I can come near him. Remember Chris Connor? Chris Connor was 5'5", probably 185, 190. He was real thick. But he absolutely crushed every fitness test, from like the skate to like the bike. Like he was just, he was another guy that if he didn't come and win fitness testing, like he's going back.
He'd be frustrated about it.
But it was, you know, you can do all the fitness testing you want and everything, but I don't know how much the coaches care about fitness testing. They want to see guys know how to play hockey, right? Hockey IQ, learn, you know, score goals, be a difference maker when you play exhibition. And I didn't really realize that until after. But, you know, those whole fitness, that's why they're getting out of it. I don't think they're doing fitness testing anymore in the NHL. They're kind of getting rid of it because it's just like, this is pointless.
Texter, TK, what's the fastest mile you ever ran?
Oh, geez. The fastest mile. I can do a 6 minute mile. A six?
Really?
Yep.
Sean, how's the what fastest mile can you run?
I mean, we're talking literally, I'm going back like almost, you know, 20 plus years at this point. I was under seven, but it wasn't close to six. I think it was high six, maybe, I don't know, let's say 6:50, I think, but I was probably 17 at the time.
Man, if I ran the mile, what time do you think I would run if I ran the mile right now?
Oh, I bet you'd get like maybe 8 minutes.
8 minutes?
8.5
If Sean Myers was running 6.5, 6:50 at 17.
You're humming. Like, yeah, you're
lengthy.
Like, yeah. I was in the peak of my conditioning. So in junior in the OHL and Sioux Greyhounds, we would do a 2 mile run and you had to get under 14 minutes. And I was like 13:30. And I was like, it's more than a jog. Like, it's a jog sprint and you got to hum around that track 8 times. And it's like, it's crazy because everyone's on that line. It's like a track meet, you know, but I always thought that like the hardest thing for a hockey player to do was run and sprint because a lot of hockey players aren't built like sprinters, you know?
No.
And doing that mile was very, very tough. But again, that's all we did. Like we practiced that. You knew what training camp was bringing, you know?
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peter Sound. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Tyler Kennedy, sponsored by Tri-State Office Furniture, the best in the business. And the Fan Text Line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, where that last question just came from, a personal injury law firm, where they always say, there's never a fee unless we get money for you. TK, take us through the inner workings of what camp is like, especially as you get further and further closer to the season, how camp kind of develops.
Yes.
And especially like how is it determined who plays when, yeah, especially in like the preseason?
Well, usually like you got 2 or 3 days of playing, you know, having hard practice, doing fitness testing, getting all the media stuff out of the way. And then you start getting those exhibition games. And as a young guy, you kind of know where you sit because the more games you play, that means they want to look at you. If you don't play many games, it's pretty much like you're already on the team.
Yeah, you're a lock.
Yeah, you're a lock. But the games are like, so when you play a home game, like all the better players play at the home game. And then like you're talking to Crosby's, those guys. And then guys like me would go and we'd be going on the road trips to the day trips to Columbus to play their team with all their studs. So how it works is the home team keeps their studs and plays their studs at home, and then they bring a B squad to go play the A squad. So when you go to Columbus, when you go to Philly to play an exhibition, like, you know, like you're going to get throttled because they're starting all their starters.
And your A guys aren't even traveling to the game, not even to watch. Are they just staying at home? Yeah.
But when you are the B team and you go to those trips, like you look around the dressing room and you got all tough guys. When I played, it's a little different now, but we had every tough guy and we definitely were getting pushed around.
You're playing the Reeveses of the world.
Yeah.
You know.
And that was kind of comforting because you knew you didn't really have to fight too much, or if it did get out of hand, you'd have your own size. But once you do all that, you play, you know, you try to play as least amount of games as possible. You end up playing all the games. It goes pretty quick, and then the last exhibition is pretty much when you know where you stand, and you have pretty much the whole team except maybe one or two of the studs, like Sid won't play, or, you know, Tanger or someone, but everyone else in the lineup. So you're trying to make that last game. And my first year, I had a great camp. I didn't make it out of the training camp, but I got called like a week after to come back up and play. So we play our exhibition in London, Ontario, and we're playing Philadelphia, and I'm on the fourth line. It's my first exhibition. They gave me an exhibition game as like a 18-year-old. So I was like, wow, I'm getting a game. That's like a win right there.
Here's a shot.
I was playing with Andre Roy, Remember Andre?
Andre Waugh. Yeah. Very good.
And some other guy. And I remember we looked at Philly's lineup and it was just meatheads. We were playing in London and they're all meatheads. And I remember Andre Waugh looks at me and goes, hey, I know you're trying to make the team, but just like don't run around and hit their tough guys because that means I have to come in and be like
lay the boom.
Yeah, lay basically. The boom. Like, and I don't want to do that. It's not even the year. It doesn't count. It doesn't count with my stats. So I was like, all right, dude, well, I got to run around a little bit and work my butt off. And I had a pretty good game. And then after the game, I'm like, guys, I might have a sniff to like maybe stay for the first nine games. And then I get called in right after the game. And it's Michael Therrien. And he goes, hey, you had a great camp. We love you. We didn't expect you to do this well. That's why we gave you a game. And he's like, but you need to develop more. We're going to send you down tomorrow to Wilkes-Barre. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, thanks, man. It was a lot of fun. I'm excited to try to get back up here. I'm like, well, what time's the car picking me up to take me to the airport? And yeah, he goes, right. Well, the bus leaves at 7 and welcome to the AHL. You know, and I was like, oh, is that how it works? He goes, yeah. You ride the bus until you make it, kid. And I was like, oh, so this is why no one wants to stay in the AHL.
He's like, you're soft, TK. Come on, you're soft.
Oh,
dude. Go ride the bus, TK. Come yeah. on.
But it was just like the way he put it. He goes, welcome to the AHL, kid. Get on that bus. And 7 a.m., you're getting on this, like, you know, those buses, 8 hours to Wilkes-Barre. You're living out of your car. That's like, people don't realize, like, when you play in the NHL, and it's different when you have a family and kids, but when you're on, like, a 1 or 2 year deal and you're kind of just not scraping through, but you're not signing those big deals. Like, you're living out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
Like, you have a place and everything, but you have like your parents' old furniture. You know, you might have your own TV. You can fit your whole life in the back of your truck, and that's how you live, you know? And that's like, when I first retired, that's the biggest thing that like changed. I was like, wow, like I actually know where my stuff is, because you lose so much stuff.
For that long.
Oh, I think
it was. What's like, the worst thing you ever lost?
I lost so much I didn't even know. Like, from clothes to suits to everything. One time I had my whole apartment was in a transport and it burnt to the ground on the way to my
house.
The
transport burnt to the ground?
Burnt to the ground.
How did that catch on fire? Did it crash into like a gasoline truck?
No, this is crazy. So I got these movers to move me from Waterfront. I used to live with George LaRocque in the Waterfront, and then I moved up to Neville Wood in, like, you know, those townhomes.
Yeah.
And I'm at practice and the moving guy called me. He's like, hey, TK, there's a lock on your storage and you want us to cut it. I go, yeah, cut it, put all of it, and I'll meet you at the house after practice. I'll be there around 1:30. And he's like, okay. I'm at my house at like 2 o'clock and I'm sitting around an empty house. I'm like, where are these guys? They're supposed to be here like a half hour ago. I get a call from the guy. He's like, hey, dude, we had a big problem. Like, we need you to come here right now. And I'm like, dude, it's all used furniture and a couple other good things, but like, just hurry up, you know?
Like, yeah, just load it up. Let's
go. We'll figure it out. He goes, no, you got to come here. We're at this address. And it was like 2 miles from my place. And so I jump in my truck, I go, and I'm like half a mile and I see smoke in the air. Like, I mean, like cloud of smoke. And I'm like, no way. And there's this recycling place off the Bridgeville exit. It's like, you know, where they collect those big bins of garbage, you know, they store them. It's like,
yeah, there's those like landfill areas.
So I'm going to pull in there. A cop stops me. He goes, hey, you can't come down to this whole place. You shut down. There's a fire. And I'm like, well, I don't know, dude, but I think my stuff was the thing on fire. So I do need to come in. So I come down there and there's a transport literally burnt to the ground. And I'm like looking at it. I'm like, wow, those are my Escalade rims. that's like everything.
Just completely melted.
Yeah. Every picture I had, everything, you know, and I see in the corner, there's four guys and they look like crazy. You know, like,
were these the movers?
Movers, like crazy. And they're all smoking cigarettes in a circle. There you go. And this, you know, the Carnegie police come over to me and they knew who I am. They're like, hey, TK, obviously sorry what happened, but we're going to figure this out. I don't care if to stay here all night. But after looking at these guys and seeing them all smoke, one of these guys did this because no one's admitting to it. He goes, I'm going to stay there. I'll stay here all night to find that butt. You know, like a cigarette butt. A cigarette butt never burns. I never knew that. And I was like, okay. He goes, yeah, I guarantee I'll find that butt. I get a text like 11:30 at night. He goes, I found the butt. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
So one of the movers.
Yeah.
What were these movers like? Were they just like a...
Right out of prison.
Right out of prison to the moving company.
You know.
Did you do a background check on these movers, TK? No. Where'd you find these people?
They were a sponsor of the Penguins, dude. I don't want to say their name, but they were a sponsor of the Penguins. That's why.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why I don't.
The Penguins recommended the movers
that
set your stuff on fire.
This is so, like Ben Stiller and Meet the Parents.
This one guy. So I go down. I'm looking through like all the burnt stuff. This one guy comes over. He goes, hey, sorry, dude. And I'm like, no problem. It's just my whole life burnt to the ground and you guys are having cigarettes. It's like, what am I going to do? You know? But it was nuts. It was so crazy that it happened. But literally, that's like my life burnt right to the ground.
That's horrible.
Yeah. And then.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
I guess one of them just ignorant enough to just flick one at the side of the truck?
Guess what happened? I had a futon, and the guy was putting the futon in the back of the transport.
Yeah.
And he had a smoke as he was sitting on my futon. And he must have ashed or dropped the cigarette or he got caught smoking near my stuff.
Yeah.
He jumped, and he must have dropped the cigarette in my futon.
On the futon.
One of them admitted to him, and he's like, I guess the driver goes, dude, we're flying down the highway and these people are pulling up. They're like, you're on fire. Going three down 376. They're like, you're on fire. You're on fire. He's like, what are you talking about? And I guess he looked up and there's flames coming to the top of the transport. So they pull off the highway and everyone ran out, burnt to the ground. Then the insurance company called me. This is even better. They're like, we'll give you $5,000 right now.
$5,000 for your entire life. Yeah, I was like, stuff.
And you know, I was 22. I'm like, oh, $5,000. Like, I'm trying to put the numbers. I'm like, oh, my Escalade rims are like $2,000 right there. Like, I don't know. And then the Penguins got involved, got me a lawyer. I ended up getting like the money I should, but it was like nuts. You know, it was the craziest. This story keeps going because I call my parents and I'm like, hey, everything's burnt down, my suits, everything.
Wow.
And then my mom's like, all right, we'll be there the next day. We're going to drive down. We'll go shopping for all new stuff. Because obviously they knew, they're like, you're going to get money for this, you know? That night, we had practice. We had a day off the next day. So me, Max, Jordan Stahl, we would go down to Southside and we party all night. Like, I mean all night.
Marios has never seen a day like it since, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I had a lot of steam to blow off, you know? And so my parents come in the next morning and I am so hungover that when we go shopping, we went to like, you know, what a couple of the furniture stores in Robinson. As soon as I find a chair, I go to sleep and I'm like, mom, just pick anything. And so like, it was, I go to my house, I see all this furniture coming in and I didn't care. Cause I was like, at the time I didn't care because I was so hungover because we went out like in training camp. It's fun to go out because all the boys go. And Max had a house on Southside, so we went again. I was hurting the next day, and I didn't care.
Do they still do that?
I don't think the players go out as much. I don't think any athletes go out as much because like before you'd have to go out and talk to girls and try to meet people. Now you just can like go on like you can text them or Instagram them or whatever. But we used to go out a lot. Like that was part of having fun in the NHL was like the parties. But I'm at my house and all this like old school furniture is wheeling in. Like, I mean like sleigh beds, like everything is wood, like exactly what my mom would put in her house. And I'm like looking and my parents are already going home. I'm like, oh my God, it looks like a 75-year-old person lives here, not like a 22-year-old. So I call my mom. She goes, yeah, well, you want to you want to howl at the moon, you got to wake up with the boys in the morning, you know? And I was like, whatever. So every time, like, I would have a buddy over or whatever, they'd be like, oh, that's a cool sleigh bed. That's a cool wooden sleigh bed. Is your grandparents? Or like, you know, I had the oldest school
man,
furniture.
You were straight out of 1940s.
Oh, dude, like, even my wife now, she goes, we got to get rid of that sleigh bed. Like, we got to get rid of all your furniture. It is like my grandparents' furniture, you know, but.
Had all kind of flowers and stuff on it, I'm sure.
Oh, it was like real, like, for older people, you know, but. I got all new stuff, but it was, and that was in training camp.
Talk
about starting the year off on the wrong foot, you know?
We started with training camp, we'll end with training camp. Great stuff, TK. Let's continue it coming up next. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Sean also has a question. Austin Bexhold in for Pump and Joe with Tyler Kennedy and Sean Myers at Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sean has a headline, we're right back. Minute mark on the Fan is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. We're joined by Tyler Kennedy, brought to you by Tri-State Office Furniture, the best in the business. Sean, it would be very ignorant of myself if I did not include you in this conversation to ask TK a question.
Well, thank you, Austin. You're a wonderful man. So, TK, earlier this week when I was with Austin, I brought up the story to him about recently Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl jumping in what looked to be a beer hockey league game. Maybe it was even just a pickup game. Did you ever crash someone's game? Just get out there where you're playing against guys who are clearly not skilled hockey players and just have fun with it?
Yeah. Well, in the summers, everyone's like, you're kind of like thriving for competitive hockey. So you want to, like, some of those upper levels of men's league, it's pretty good. You get a good little sweat. Guys obviously are going so hard against you. Back home, we used to have like an NHL skate, but I never really played those like men's league. And then when I started dating my wife, I used to play at Ice Castle. Tyler Mirovich used to have this like pro skate with all the pro guys, Trocheck, Miller, all these guys would skate and they were really good games, but they also had some of these guys that were fill-ins. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And this is when I had a wife and my daughter. And I'm like, hey, we're in the championship game and everyone's playing hard. And then like this like duster, like, I mean, this kid didn't even play or he played like, I don't know. He wasn't a hockey player, but he was trying to fight me. And I'm like, dude.
Bad idea, kid.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, like you're like 18. I'm 30 and my wife and kids are in the stands. I can't fight you right now. Like, and he was like, hey, you want to go? Want to see? And I'm like, dude. One, I'll like crush your face. Like I will beat the wheels out off you. You know, like I will literally like staple your eyes shut, you know? And
were you still in the league at this point?
Yeah, I was still on the Penguins.
So then why would you even challenge? Like that just sounds so stupid.
And like the NHLers are guys are going hard and they're trying to get a good sweat. And like, I'm not sure if I clipped him by accident or something, but like he tripped me and I'm like, you know, obviously not going to let this kid. So I tripped him back and then he kind of turned around and he goes, what are you going to do? And
I'm like, oh, so he had some motive. Oh, yeah. Maybe it wasn't stupid. There was some motive involved here.
I was like, what? And then I, you know, obviously started to threaten his life with everything. And then I'm like, I go off the ice. I'm like sitting at Ice Castle on the bench and I'm going, this kid's like 19. I got my wife and my daughter. I can't do this right now.
You don't want to go home and be like,
and what?
Why did you absolutely beat the you know what out of that kid, TK?
I can't win.
What were you doing, TK?
Yeah, I can't win. And even like, imagine if you got a lucky shot and the first time my daughter's watching me play in the summer, I get dropped by some kid, you know, in my,
not ideal.
You know, it was just like, but that was the only time where I was like, all right, I'm not playing against, you know, these men's league guys, but you know, with McDavid, I would think you'd have an enforcer just watching his back, you know?
So we are now a week away from the MLB trade deadline. There are a lot of rumors around some of the Pirates like Mitch Keller, David Bednar, Dennis Santana. How were you and how were members of your team able to handle those types of rumors? Like, do you hear them when, like, national reporters are putting out, you know, the Rangers are interested in Tyler Kennedy or the Panthers are interested in Jordan Staal, stuff like that? Did you guys hear those types of rumblings?
Well, I don't know if my name got pushed around that much because I'm not sure if I was, like, that big of a name. But when I was on the Penguins, it was always, like, I don't want to be the guy getting traded to a bad team for a good player to make a playoff push. Because my 6 years here, we'd always make huge moves at the deadline to go and try to win.
Yeah, to add.
Like, Ray Shero, that's all he played to win every year. And you were always just hoping, please don't be me going the other way, going like Kobe to go to Atlanta, you know, going to a team that doesn't have a sniff. And then when I went to San Jose, I didn't have any luck in San Jose. I never played well. Things didn't work out in San Jose. And I was like the first time at trade deadline. I never heard anything. My agent didn't tell me. He just said, are you healthy? And I'm like, yeah, I'm healthy. He goes, you might get traded tomorrow. I'm like, oh. And I didn't really worry about it. You know, I only had my wife. We can go wherever we want. We had no commitment with kids. But I thought I squeaked through it again. But I was half dressed going on to the ice for pregame skate. And he called me and Andrew Desjardins in. And obviously, as soon as the GM goes, hey, can we talk to you? You know you got traded.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, where are we going? Please, somewhere with a palm tree. Please, somewhere with a palm tree. You know, but.
No, not going back to Canada? You don't want to go back home?
No, just.
Give me good weather.
Yeah. Somewhere nice, you know, or somewhere that's got a good team. So I went to Long Island and Andrew Desjardins went to Chicago and he won a cup there. And I was like, oh, they couldn't pick me up today on Chicago, you know? But yeah, it's crazy because as soon as you get traded, they pack your stuff. You get out of that room, your stuff's packed up and you're like out of that room. Like you're not part of the team anymore. And you don't hear from anyone else. You hear from some of the your teammates going, hey, thanks, you're awesome. Hopefully see you soon, good luck. But like for the staff of the NHL team, like they don't associate with you.
Anymore. Not even like the coaches? They don't say anything?
They say, hey, thanks. I don't know why it didn't work out. And I was like, it's because you didn't play me enough. That's why, Todd McLellan. You know?
It's an yeah. answer to everything.
You didn't put me on the power play. You put the same guys every year on the power play. You never won a cup in San Jose. But anyways, yeah, we had a little, they have like a little like, hey, I don't know why it worked out. Sorry, good luck, this and that. I'm like, at that time, you're like, well, you kind of unleash on the coach because you can, because he has no effect on your career. You know, you're just like, yeah, you're, you know. So Andrew went in to talk to Doug Wilson first, and I went to talk to the coach. And that's when, you know, the coach is like, I don't know why it didn't work out. We love you, TK, this and that. I'm like, well, one, you're a healthy scratch me every third game. I wasn't on the power play.
So you weren't biting your tongue. You're letting loose. Oh, yeah,
you can like, and he's going, well, that's like, you know, we didn't think you were playing well enough. I'm like, well, you know, you run with the same guys. Like you unleash on the coach and yep. he unleashes on you. And after you're like, all right, see ya, you know, and you walk
that's
out.
That's it. You don't yeah. talk again for a long period of
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you get outside the like the rink and you're like, all right, what's going on? And then within a half hour, you get a call from like, I got a call from Long Island, like the Islanders, and it was their PR or, you know, their travel person. And he's like, hey, we got a plane for you. 3 hours. We're going to grab your stuff. We'll meet you in Dallas. We'll figure everything else out later. So I went home, told my wife, hey, I'm jumping on a plane in an hour and a half. I'll let you know where I land, you know. And she's kind of just, she waited there for like a week until I got to Long Island. And she was actually pregnant. And we stayed in a hotel for like three and a half months. And she was so pregnant and puking and all that stuff in the room. And I was just like, oh my God.
Man.
And we were like a motel. Like,
how did you play through that? Well?
Yeah, I played well in Long Island. I came out of the gates pretty hot. I had great, I had a little bit of a jump in my step. I felt good. It's like starting over and you get to prove yourself that you're a good player. So I had a pretty good finisher to that year. But it was so different going from Pittsburgh to San Jose to Long Island. Like, I went from like the best organization that spent endless amount of money on you. They'd get you, if you wanted a stick, they'd get you 10. If you wanted to eat healthy, they'd have the best meals. They'd have the best drinks, the best shakes. I went to San Jose. They were kind of figuring out, but they weren't that great. I went to Long Island. And this Long Island's, obviously, the Islanders have changed a lot with like how they treat their players. But I tell this all the time. I was like, okay. And they actually had me sit beside John Tavares. And after a game,